Welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and I hope that you have filed your taxes, unless you're filing an extension. And speaking of that, we're going to talk about, can you extend your lifespan? hopefully you can hear the chuckle in the room, because in the house, I'm in PK's house. I'm here today with the amazing, wonderful, and fabulous co-host, PK the Incomparable.
John Boy, welcome. Welcome here. Good to do this in person.
Yeah, it's been a while, and it's nice to speak from an appropriate distance, but without a mask.
Indeed. Here's where we are. It's springtime, you know, which means that we're getting some sun and also some snow. It feels appropriate to sort of reconnect again.
Yes, and this is episode number 178. And in talking about what we're going to talk about today, you know, I really want to really dive into this idea of physiologic age versus chronologic age, and what are some of the characteristics of that, the presentations, and also are there things that we can do to possibly have an effect?
Absolutely. So how did this hit your radar? Why are we talking about this today?
It's on my mind a lot, honestly, you know, for various reasons, whether it's people that I'm working with are giving me this task, or I'm thinking about that myself now as I, you know, go through the decades. But really, you know, thinking about I'm not so much worried about extending the lifespan as I am concerned about enhancing the quality of it. And where that comes from for me with the lifetime athlete is looking at those characteristics that really epitomize or identify youthful vitality and viscoelastic properties in the human body, particularly elasticity, and how do we develop that, and why is it so important? And so that's probably a long-winded answer to your question, but thanks for letting me do that.
Absolutely not. No, I think that, you know, because the central question that we're asking today in comparing these two, physiologic versus chronologic age, and again, that is not, you know, is your body how old you are in number of years versus is there another factor? Like quote unquote age, right? And so the question that we're asking here is, can training extend that vibrancy of youth, essentially?
You know, I like that. Yes.
Right. And so, I mean, one of the things that we've talked about in sort of in advance and preparation about this is your response to that, you know? So just right off the top, what's your answer?
Yeah. And now that I'm reflecting a bit more.
Sure.
I'm struggling a little bit because I'm thinking, well, how far back should I go to explain this? But I think the easiest way to say is, you know, I have a nightly YouTube habit. You know this.
And I,
you know, I only watch like certain things. You know, obviously there's a lot of sports in there, and there's, you know, exercise, fitness, conditioning, training, cooking, just a couple of things. That's about it. Home improvement. But what happens is, with the wonderful algorithms that exist everywhere and in YouTube as well, things will show up in my feed. And so I watch a lot of track meets, especially in the summertime. I love those Diamond League meets. And this year's an Olympic year, so hopefully that's going to go through and we'll get thrilled by what Olympians can do. But sometimes these like USA Track and Field Masters National Championships 2018 shows up on my screen. So basically what that is like, you know, it's a track meet for adults. You can even say old people if you want, although that's, you can say what you want to say. So I started watching, you know, these things, and it's really fascinating to me when I look at the different event groups that exist in track and field at older ages and the apparent youthfulness in the groups. And I'm like, whoa. This is really fascinating. And so, you know, I'm just observing. I'm not trying to offend anyone, but I would say when you look at the throwers, and so the throwers in track and field, you know, they're hammer throw, shot put, discus, javelin, they look age appropriate. So, you know, you see somebody who's 60 years old or they're competing in the 60 to 64 year age group, and you think, yeah, they look like they're about 60. You look at the distance runners, and a lot of them look 20 years older than they are. And quite frankly, many of them look stiff, slow, weak, and fragile. Now, I think that's not because distance running in and of itself is evil. It's probably because the methods that these people are using for training aren't working for their youthfulness of, you know, eventually. But ultimately, when you look at the jumpers and the sprinters, so that's the high jump, long jump, triple jump, and then events 1, 2, and 400 meters plus hurdles. Those people look 20 years younger than they are. And that's really interesting across the board. And so I started to see this, like, huh, what do you know about that? And so then I started to think, wow, it appears that sprinting and jumping might be quite valuable in helping the organism to not only be athletic through the lifespan or more athletic, but also to look and feel and maybe perform younger, maybe even live longer, although that one's always a hard one to say.
Absolutely. So really, I mean, if I'm just kind of summarizing here, you're talking about a quote unquote fountain of youth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've observed this, you've thought about it. So where do we get started having this conversation? If we're talking about the fountain of youth, what word comes to mind?
I've got several. Have you got any?
I'm no expert, but we talked about it earlier. Elasticity is what I was thinking. And you know, the reason why that pops into my mind is we talk about kids crashing, right? We say, oh, they've got rubber bones. Can't do that anymore because I don't have rubber bones anymore. And if you kind of extrapolate that and put it into some semi-technical language, we're really talking about elasticity. And I think that's really sort of a mark of youth, or, you know, would be reflective of sort of a youthful countenance in terms of an athletic performance.
Yes. And, you know, elasticity, it's really that ability to use force, to deliver force, to transfer force, to not have forces coming in, have deleterious effects upon you. You know, so, you know, someone who is elastic is able to sometimes bounce or, you know, do other things, you know, just like you said. And those characteristics are kind of given to every human, and then they seem to disappear as the decades move on. But it turns out that they disappear more because they're not being trained than because they're entirely destined to go away.
And see, that's interesting, because we kind of, I think there is an assumption out there, again, maybe it's just a wrong way of thinking, that that's sort of the rubber bones, the athleticity, the elasticity is for young people. And then it's just going to naturally go away as we get older. I mean, that's pretty much out there. It's what people think and talk about.
Yeah. And I think there's some small amount of truth to that. It's like, sure, we're not in denial, you know, nobody's going to live forever. And we certainly expect some amount of decline, particularly as we get close to the end. But in reality, we can maintain these functional capacities really far out and really close to the end, as opposed to seeing people who are, you know, unfortunately in their 20s and 30s, looking old, stiff, weak, slow, fragile, not agile, fast, elastic. Athleticity was the word. We need that. That might be like our new business, you know, athleticity.
Oh, buddy. Well, I mean, so describe to me a little bit more when you're watching these athletes and you see athletes or people in general who look younger than their actual age. And what are you seeing when you're sort of witnessing them?
Yeah. I think the first thing you would see is how they carry themselves. Mm. You know, they don't look like life and gravity is beating them down. You know, they just have a buoyancy about them. You know, they're more afloat than other folks. And there's also, with this whole vibrancy, you know, you see it in their eyes, you know, bright, clear eyes, their skin, you know, it's taut and springy. And if you can do tests like that, where, you know, if you want to grab your skin on your forearm and pull it out and look at how it snaps back. Obviously, you know, it might not be quite as good as when you were 15, but in the more youthful person, you know, the sagosis is a little bit less. And so, you know, we see that in that carriage, but then when people who are elastic start to move, yeah, there's this, it says athletic, it says grace, it says poetry. And that is not present in those whose elasticity has gone below a certain level.
Right, right. And that does make sense. And that's funny that just kind of zeroing in on that, connecting youth to elasticity, I'm going to try to get that right. Do you see it in any other sort of characteristics of that person that embodies looking younger than their age says?
I mean, sometimes I think it's even true in attitude. You know, you can't separate physiology from psychology. And the resilient, robust person, I mean, I love these words, sure. You know, has a very spring-like nature and is able to rebound, you know, from all things life.
Got it. Well, let's transition to training then. And so if you're thinking about, I guess, elastic elements and connecting those in training, especially when we're thinking about this sort of youthful athlete, what comes to your mind?
Yeah, it's really this whole idea of jumping and sprinting. Mm. And so everything that we do in training can be scaled, of course. But, you know, some amount of jumping and moving rapidly is necessary to elicit, you know, the stimulus that then gets the response in the body to maintain. You know, this is so true with everything. But if we keep telling our bodies through our training behaviors on a regular basis, hey, stay elastic, they will, you know, comply. And so that's kind of the baseline. And then you can start to get fancy and say, well, you know, what about like various plyometric exercises and change of direction movements and even, you know, some like ballistic movement patterns or lifting, almost like variants of Olympic lifting. Yeah, we can use any and all of those things if it's appropriate for the individual, both in terms of the selection and the gradation of it.
Right. Now, what you're saying is that by continuing to do jumping and sprinting, you maintain that capability in the body. There, maybe it's just my, I don't know how I've thought about it, but the reason that you wouldn't have those in your training is because they are for younger athletes. And the reason why you don't do them anymore is because you can't do that. But what you're saying is, by stopping doing them, you really discourage the body from maintaining elastic and continuing to have that capability?
Yeah, it's not a don't do because you can't. It's a can't do because you don't phenomenon, mm-hmm. you know, that we see. And so I think one of my jobs is to like encourage people, sure. Hey, you know, there's a place for you in all of this. And there's a way to do that safely. So you don't feel threatened, but also you can really keep, you know, getting the things that, you know, give back to you the most, you know, in all areas of life, of course. But mm-hmm. When I start thinking about being elastic, I think, well, okay, we know that every human, and we talk about it here all the time, you know, you need all the big five, so you need some endurance, you know, of course you do. And, you know, and strength and speed and power and agility. But when you really look at these elastic movement patterns, mm-hmm. it's how a person takes strength and speed and combines it with agility. So those things fit together to then allow you to, you know, bop and move and jive, but also like, you know, whether you're trying to go after a ball on a tennis court or you're trying to, you know, get some distance on the basketball court, and, you know, you can name anything that you want, or maybe you just trip and you either want to catch yourself, spring sideways, or roll out of it. The elastic person can, but the stiff, weak, slow, fragile person who doesn't train this is probably looking at a college fracture of the wrist, a rotator cuff tear, and, you know, some hospital time.
Right. Okay. So if we're thinking about just being man on the street, woman on the street, we're thinking about, okay, can I do this? Your answer would always be yes. But talk to me about how I would begin to start thinking about incorporating that into my practice, my life, my training.
Yeah. Everything's always context dependent, and each person is different.
Sure.
And I think we want to respect that, but also, well, how can you meet yourself where you are? Where's your body right now? And so I often will use the term that we have to earn the right to train. Now, I don't mean that as a jerk at all. I'm just saying, like, oh gosh, it may not be appropriate for someone to start jumping on and off a picnic table. You know, for many reasons, you know, not appropriate, or maybe not even a possibility, but we can say, okay, look, we can start somewhere. And so if you've got a foundation of training, and maybe you've been, you know, exercising regularly for 3 to 6 months, or maybe you're, you know, kind of someone who's got a great athletic history, these things have faded, you're kind of in weekend warrior syndrome, still trying to find your way as far as, you know, getting a consistent system that works for you. Well, it was like, okay, what do we do? Well, first of all, with sprinting, I'll talk about that first. Sure. There are benefits to sprinting in any mode. And so if you can sprint in a pool or you can sprint on a bike, again, we're going to get some of these benefits. However, from a functional perspective, we're going to get the most benefits if we can do that via ambulation or locomotion. In other words, you know, running. Again, that may not be for everyone, and I understand that. And so we're always able to problem solve. But for a person who can, that's really what you're striving for. And so we'd say, well, okay, have you been doing some walking? Have you been doing some easy running? Maybe there's some exercises and drills and different things that you've been doing for a while so that we can start to safely increase velocity with your movement. And so that might look very different for each person, but for most people, we can get them you know, out somewhere. A lot of times I like to start on grass because it's a little more forgiving. It's not quite as fast as, say, a track would be, but it's a little softer. And as long as it's a manicured field where you don't have obstacles to be concerned with, you know, we can start maybe running some, you know, just 20s or 30s or 40s, as in yards or meters, you know, at X percent, that 50, 60, 70% of maximum speed or effort, and then building up over time so that we can then get those 5 to 10 second maximum efforts. And that's really where you're at there. You know, if you're doing something for 20 seconds or 30 seconds, there are benefits to doing that, but that's not really, it's not really a true max sprint effort, and it won't give quite the same central nervous system and muscle and connective tissue benefits as those more intense ones.
Right, right, right. And so by working up to that, obviously starting where you're at, but getting that sprinting into your life helps improve your elasticity.
Yeah, totally. Hugely. I mean, and you know, it,
how's that work?
Well, I think I can give you several reasons that are kind of like physiologic deep dives. You know, the first one would be when you look at the muscle fibers, a true sprint will increase our most explosive muscle fibers, which are the type 2X fibers. So they're the fast twitch fibers that are the fastest among them. And they have been shown to kind of degrade over time. And a lot of those studies probably are just representing that they're not being trained. Mm. So we can recruit and then, you know, maintain that small percentage of type 2X fibers in our bodies, actually more effectively with sprinting than almost anything else, first of all. Then the next thing that happens is, and this would also be true, you know, with any of these like plyometric kinds of activities, is we're actually increasing connective tissue durability to a degree that we can't get other ways, because that high velocity or rapid loading causes a density increase that is unique within the collagen fibrils of our tendons. And so it's like, oh, okay, now there's a cool benefit. And then, you know, for dinner table talks, hey man, you know, I've been working on the collagen fibrils of my tendons. and then the other thing is the wiring. So our neuromuscular wiring actually gets tuned up a little bit. So we have these things called alpha motor neurons, which, you know, basically connecting our cerebral cortex to our muscles. And so there's kind of a connection from the brain itself. And then it goes down through the peripheral nerves. And then we have these synapses at the neuromuscular junction. Well, the alpha motor neuron becomes more efficient or more enhanced. So we have a better use of acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter, for example, all from doing sprint training, which does not happen if we don't do that type of training.
Interesting. So does that, and that's basically any of these sort of sprinting activities, like you mentioned, plyometrics, et cetera, like that type of training.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you can kind of lump them together as well as separate them. So sprinting is, you know, unique and functional and part of the skill set that humans are supposed to have. But then if I, you know, move right into the jumping, and so we can kind of break this up a little bit, you know, jumping, hopping, skipping, bounding, jumping versus landing, concentric versus eccentric, plyometric, all those things fit into this category, because what they're doing is we're taking our body mass and we're moving it rapidly with relationship to gravity and the ground. And so these amortization phases, or these stretch shortening cycles, where you hit the ground, you absorb some force, and then you turn it back around and throw your body into the air. They are those same kinds of stimuli that are happening with the foot strikes in sprinting.
Interesting. Okay. So we've got sprinting, jumping. Is there another type of sort of training that encourages this elasticity?
Yeah. I think I'll probably want to come back and in the jumping category, I can explain some of those terms, sure, which I should do. But if I go on and say, yeah, well, if you think about it, any movement that has these kind of ballistic loading natures is going to be good. So now all of a sudden, are there certain things that we might do gymnastically, or, you know, almost like a plyo push-up, you know, a clapping push-up or something? Yeah, you can use your body different ways. The speed of movement in throwing a medicine ball, if it's a lightweight one, doing that violently, that is good. Again, should be progressed safely. We can take, for people who are interested in doing it and have good coaching, highly skilled, the Olympic lifts. And if we're doing the Olympic lifts, the bar speed, as it's now able to be tracked, it's still not as fast as some of those other things we just described, but there is a benefit. And there's also a benefit loading through the skeleton from top down versus bottom up. So yeah, it's just zesty and fancy that we can use these kinds of things. And the cool part about this is, because it's a natural wired part of the human beast, it feels good, feels natural when you do it. It's like, oh, this was missing, and now I am a vital beast, and I am capable of pretty much, like, you know, jumping and slashing and hunting and killing and feeding and living.
Right. And just to be clear, the killing is in the animal sense out there in terms of living.
At least for modern humans.
Modern humans, right? Exactly. Very much so modern humans. All right. Well, let's talk about, let's make this tangible, because you have a special story to share about one of your clients, your athletes, your broaches. And it's a good illustration of what you just described there. When you sink your teeth back into this kind of training and movement, it feels good, and it's amazing what the body's capable of.
Yeah, and so this is very recent. It's kind of the story of Paul, okay, if you will. And I put together, just for a few minutes, a collection of video clips that I had captured with my, as you indicated, friend and client, Paul, as he was doing some of these very things that we've been talking about, you know, different types of plyometrics and activating exercises and sprinting and jumping. And that is available on YouTube at the Lifetime Athlete YouTube channel. I believe the title of the video is Training the Lifetime Athlete. So in this case, it's just training. It's one example of training one lifetime athlete. But I think the story of Paul is very interesting, because when Paul and I started working together, he was in his late 50s, and he came to me with a list of things. And it was basically, I don't feel well, I'm overweight, I have back pain, I had knee surgery, I have low energy, you know, had a lot of issues going on. I said, well, okay, you know, we can work with this. And so in a coaching model, you know, you can coach your way out of those things and into greater things possibly. And so, you know, we worked on some of the things we do, got his, you know, lifestyle tuned up, his exercise and training going, nutrition tweaked. And then all of a sudden, so Paul's healthy, Paul's leaner, he's feeling good. And in that process, we really uncovered this natural athlete that was waiting to get out. And in his case, it was a very elastic athlete because, you know, his inner beast, if you will, using animal fit terms, we unleashed that inner beast to unlock his athletic potential. His beast was a bobcat and he's very elastic. And so now at age 70, there's a video for a couple minutes, which is quite entertaining. You can watch this 70-year-old guy. You know, he's throwing around some big weights. He's jumping off of, you know, 36 inch boxes, sprinting down the field. He's at the track. And, you know, it's wonderful. It makes my heart feel good because it's inspiring to a lot of us. I want to be like Paul. I'm not too much younger than Paul, but when I get there, I want to still be able to do what he's doing now. And I also think that this example that Paul provides is kind of like an excuse duster because people will say, well, I'm too old. I said, well, there's Paul. He's 70. Well, I've had all these orthopedic issues. Yes, so did Paul. Well, I still work full time. Yep, so does Paul. Well, I don't have 5 hours a day to train. Well, Paul trains for 45 to 60 minutes three times a week. So, I mean, hey, here you go.
That's true. And I saw the video and it really is. It is impressive. And, you know, I've known Paul for a number of years now, but I guess the progression that he's undergone as an athlete, and you know, you've got a decade into your relationship together. So this is another thing that I think is so, it's cool, it's inspiring, but it's so informational because you're describing this arc and really putting together all the different components. Like there's no question he's a driven, motivated person, and he's connecting really the end result with the practice. And like he does the work. But what you're describing is, you know, he's got his nutrition right, and he does do his, he's got his lifestyle dialed in, but the training is not some absurd, you know, like A-list movie star Marvel behind the scenes stuff. This is, you know, three times a week, you know, 45 minutes to an hour per time. So if you're connecting his training regimen with the feats that you're seeing on this video, it's like, it is definitely like, wow, that is, it's cool to see, but it's also attainable is what you're describing. You know, we were talking about the youthful elasticity of these athletes that we see. Maybe you're watching a sort of a master's track meet on YouTube. That could be, we don't know what goes into that. You do know, John, what goes into his training because you have created the program and work out with him. And then you see the results. So this is not some sort of magical thing that there's no special sauce. There's a special sauce, but it's not quote unquote special. It's just very attainable. And in that to me is the most, I guess, the part that I like the most from seeing that video is because he's done the work and he's reaping the reward.
Yeah. And you really bring up this whole concept of, say, slow cooking your conditioning. Sure. And being patient. And, you know, that's, I think these days that's often termed an LTAD or long-term athletic development model or program. And yeah, that's what I think we all should be. We're in it for the long haul, known as life. And every person has something that they love to do or want to do. For some, it's a really defined sport. You know, for others, it's what they consider a recreational pastime, you know, gardening, playing with the grandkids. And then for others still, they're just like, doggone it, I don't want to be a risk factor for, you know, early institutionalization, or I just want to feel good. And all those things are valid. And those things get me excited every day. And, you know, so I mean, that's what mostly I've done for a long time, and I have lots of people like Paul. Many of those don't live around here, so I can't capture as many video clips of them as I can of Paul. But yeah, it's humbling and inspiring for me to, you know, see someone succeed and feel great and have that smile. And then, you know, they understand, and then they become, ambassadors for, you know, their circle. And, you know, that's really what we're all trying to do here is create, you know, just longer lasting, higher performing beasts. And, you know, that I know I'm rambling, but Paul's a great example of that.
Absolutely. And I think that what's fun for me, and it's connecting to what you just said there, is that this is, it is inspiring, but in a way that it feels so accessible, and it's a manifestation of that, that thing that we could maybe talk about in the abstract, where, well, what does make a person look younger than their age, just based on, if you didn't know, you know, like just on how they move. And his story really is an example of that. And I think that, it really, I think, especially the before and after, you know, came to you with these things that he wanted to improve on, and it's happened.
Yes.
You know, so it's not sort of a, well, theoretical, it's not some Instagram athlete or influencer where you don't know what's happening there, right? It's not ambiguous, because we know, I mean, you're mm-hmm. with him every day. Mm-hmm. This has actually happened. And so from that perspective, it's fun to see.
Oh, totally. And yeah, I'm thinking random thoughts as you were talking about that, like equipment. And, you know, so sure. These things come up, you know, certainly we've heard, you know, with the pandemic, we have both an increase in cost and a decrease in availability of exercise equipment. And that is true, but, you know, there's things are available. You have to search to get what you might need for your training. If you go to a facility that's, you know, that's comprehensive, that's one thing. But, you know, if you're doing a lot of this through home gym backyard ideas, which are a lot of my clients, there's a way, you know, there's always a way. You know, in Paul's case, there's an interesting story here, because he works out at his home gym, and he does that about 6 months a year, five, six, 7 months, depending on the weather here in Montana. And then he goes outside to train, you know, parks, playgrounds, fields, and tracks. That's kind of the model that I encourage for everyone, because, you know, when the weather is nice, you get the natural surfaces sometimes, the oxygen, the sunshine, and also fellowship when that, you know, when we can get that. Those things are important, but I still think the home gym as a base is really valuable. So getting to my point is that Paul built his home gym over years. I want to say it was 6 to 7 years of, you know, just, okay, I'm going to get just a couple things. I'm going to work with those, get competent, build some mastery, then expand it. And that's how he's, you know, he's done that because he was motivated and kept wanting to go to the next level. I have other folks that, you know, they have limited space and they've got a $40 budget, and we can do stuff, you know? And so that's really a good message. Now, being the joker that I am, there is an exercise in the video where Paul's doing med ball slams. And it's pretty interesting because he's got a 15-pound medicine ball and he's hitting it so hard, he's almost got to do a vertical jump to catch it as it goes up. One time he almost hits himself in the face with it. But, you know, in joking, as people say, well, I don't have a medicine ball. I say, what you can do is tell you what, take a sack or something, go out in your backyard and just pick up dog crap, man, and make a bag of crap and then wrap it with duct tape. But don't do slams with that one, okay?
That's disgusting. I did not know where you were going with that. That is absolutely not endorsed. 50% of the people on this podcast do not believe in that method. Interesting. So is there anything else like that someone, you know, put a bow on Paul's story if they're watching the video, or that they may not pick up from the video, or that, I guess, what's the final word on that, as him as an example of this sort of youthful elasticity that you might want to leave the listeners with?
Yeah, I think hopefully the message comes across in the videos that this is possible. You can do this. And, you know, it's an open, inclusive society. You're welcome. And that's really, I think that's really important that to me, that we have that kind of a message. It's just, we have to decide, well, okay, what is your goal and motivation level? You indicated that with Paul, his motivation's high, and that's critical. You know, sure. That's really part of our whole thing is motivation. But your goal might not be Paul's goal, but that's okay. Paul's just an example of a fairly extreme outcome that can be achieved. And to be honest, it was more a product of time and consistency than complexity or, like, you know, like you said, you know, long grinds, you know, that we didn't really need to do that in his case. In fact, that's the last thing I would mention on this whole Paul story is, if you want elasticity, you have to use intensity in your training, but you have to have a lot of recovery. You've got to be smart about it, and you got to watch the inflammation. Especially, like, let's say with a 70-year-old athlete, Even in, you know, Paul's healthy, he does look younger, you know, when you look at him, but his ability to recover is probably not as good as it was when he was 20. And, you know, he wasn't doing this when he was 20 and I wasn't working with him, but nonetheless, that's really the key. And so we've got to have customized, personalized programming because everybody's unique. And so, and there are good programs out there and online coaches that are doing this work, but there's also just a lot of programs that are inappropriate for the maturing or lifetime athlete because they're really only designed for, you know, the 25-year-old Instagram influencer. And they're oftentimes designed by that person who maybe doesn't have quite enough experience to deal with, you know, the Pauls of the world.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah,
absolutely. Final question that I have for you. How does nutrition play a role in the elasticity?
Oh, I love this. Okay. So it's a twofold answer. First of all, there's the what not to do, you know, sure. So we're always talking about avoiding the evil triad, which is the industrial seed oils, the refined sugars, the processed grains. Yeah. Because those things have been proven, you know, inarguably to promote inflammation. And so we don't want inflammatory processes going on because that just doesn't help with good tissue health. But now on the intake side of it, it's also really key and based on current as well as some longstanding research. You got to have enough protein coming in that diet, high quality protein, probably animal protein if you're asking me on this show. You need some collagen. And you need vitamin C. And those are the things that have been shown to build healthy, resilient, elastic tissue in the body. They're the building blocks that we, you know, make our skin and hair and nails and tendons and muscles and bones out of.
It's fascinating. That's fascinating. Because that's both a stay away from and then add to essential.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to get around that because we all know it. It's just, we want to deny it because of our addictions and all these other things. So instead of reaching for like the chips, you know, which that's that combination of the evil triad that's going to inflame your body. And also it's nutrient devoid. You might want to reach for, you know, like some steak and fruit. Hey, imagine that, like a plant-based diet. Maybe you're trying to reset your metabolism, but nonetheless, we know this. And so like in this world, there's also a place for the durable, versatile human beast. If you're healthy and you're doing most of those things, sure, every once in a while, you can get away with the indiscretion. But if you're only building your body out of these really inferior, I don't even want to call them building blocks, you know, it's scrap materials. Sure. You're not going to get these outcomes. And so you got to support the training with the nutrition.
Well, I find that really interesting because the way you describe that for good tissue health, tissue, cellular level, like the, think about the chips, right? And the most common thing is, oh, this is it's going to make you fat. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, quote unquote fat, right? Or it's not unhealthy, but it's more like a value judgment. It's like a lack of discipline. We're not talking about either of those things, right? We're specifically talking about in terms of athleticism, in terms of elasticity. That means you have good tissue health in your body on cellular levels, muscles, tendons, bones, etc. By putting that stuff into your system, you're messing that up. You're basically giving your body the wrong fuel, or you're giving your body obstacles to have that elasticity. So removing that and then adding these good things, pro, collagen, vitamin C, that's how you pump that up. So it's like staying away from the chips, but for a completely different logical reason to athletic performance that doesn't have anything to do with sort of what's out there in the cultural sort of conversation of, you know, food that's bad and good for you.
Yeah. And like, and the occasional chip's not going to be a big deal if you're getting those other things in, because, you know, they are delicious and addictive. And as, you know, sure. Americans, modern humans, we, you know, once you've tasted a chip, you know, it's going to be hard to go through life never having another chip. But yeah, just getting those things in. In fact, there's even, you know, good data to suggest that if those nutrients, the protein, the collagen, and the vitamin C are taken in close proximity to the workout, the effects are even greater.
Yeah. And I think that that's pretty much what's fascinating, because, you know, inflammation, we could do a whole show on that, just being how big of an impact it has, how insidious, and how bad it makes us feel. So to have that youthful sort of athletic like performance and to see that in someone else, they clearly, it's the absence of that inflammation.
Yeah. Yeah. So much so. And so that is an interesting show today, because we were talking about, this whole idea of looking and performing younger than you actually are. And then we kind of went into what's elasticity and, what value jumping and sprinting have, plyometrics, ballistic movements done safely, of course, probably with appropriate coaching and nutrition. And, I think that's a great message. It strengthens me in my thinking. It's like, okay, well, how do I keep putting these things into my own practices? And I'm excited to do so.
Absolutely. So if you're listening to this and you're saying, how do I get me some of that type of training, that insight, there's a few different ways that you can get at John on the lifetimeathlete.com. Personal coaching, obviously the training tribe's out there for you if you're interested in that. Any other way to get at you, John?
Oh, getting at me, you can find me on most of the media, social media networks, and all that information is available through the website as well. So I won't bore you guys here, but just want to say, thank you to PK for having this chat with me, and also for you listeners. You guys are awesome. You're why we're here, and just keep being awesome. Thanks again. And I'm going to sign out.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.